Greetings, friends. Welcome to the Pin Tool Podcast. My name is Al Wayman, owner of Creek Road Pottery in Lacyville, Pennsylvania, next to the cold Tuscarora Creek. Pull up a chair around the wheel as we discuss topics concerning the art and craft of pottery, good books, storytelling, marketing, and creating work that matters for folks who care. Greetings, friends. Welcome to the Pin Tool Podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 9, and quite a bit's been going on around the pottery. Last weekend, I attended a wood firing up at the Bill Moon Kiln up near Mills, PA. It's central, north central PA. So it's almost to the New York State border out near Route 6. And it was an amazing time. I didn't have any work in the kiln. I wanted to go out and help Bill fire the kiln to get practice for when my wood kiln would be put up. And I needed to understand his kiln management process, how he managed the teams, how he fired the kiln, just to get another perspective and get back into practice of wood firing. The last time I wood fired was about 25 years ago. And back then we were students, we were learning. Yeah, we did shifts, and it was amazing. However, I wasn't the owner. I didn't have a lot of skin in the game, but now I do, right? And I had to go find out. So I'm going back in June, hopefully. Last Saturday, Bill opened the kiln. He got some amazing pieces out, and I can show you a video of that and send it in the attachment to this recording in the show notes. So I'm sitting on the back porch. It's very nice. We got a lot of rain this week. Today I just got back from taking a trip down near Philadelphia, PA, to pick up an Olympic updraft kiln. I have two other Olympic updrafts. I've seen this one come up at a really good deal on Facebook Marketplace. A pottery artist down there was going from gas to electric, and she just wanted it gone, right? So I went down, and I was able to pick that up. Took my dad with me. He loves the trips, and had a great time talking to people. And then we made the long trip back. It was about 3.5 hours, but we did the trip, got the kiln unloaded in one piece without dumping it in the highway, right? So I'm really happy about that. So this kiln will need some maintenance. Nothing that I probably can't fix, and it'll need some new tips put on it in the firing ports and in the burners, I mean. So I'll be working on that, but I'm pretty confident I can get it running. Another thing, I attended the Southern Adirondack Homesteading Festival up at the Washington County Fair near Greenwich, New York, and that was amazing. I took some pots with me, and I got to talk to some of the homesteaders up there. And if you haven't heard the episode on customer segments, homesteaders are another customer group that I would love to make work for and solve problems for. So I really got to talk and listen to homesteaders, what they would like made, what they use, and what they find frustrating about some things. And hopefully I can put that into some designs and make them work. I think that a lot of times we don't get out of the studios enough, and we may run to Pinterest and other places, but we miss the subtleties and the nuances from listening to stories and talking to people who are actually in those customer segments and what their needs and wants are, right? And the stories, they tell themselves when they use your work, is pretty amazing. So that's what I did. I went up, put up a little table, and put my pots out there. And I sold a pot. and I sold some more. It was really nice selling a pot, which is my goal for every show, to sell one pot. And it was a bonus to sell a bunch more. And that paid for the gas and the trip to Philly today. It paid for gas in the truck. I give Dad some money for going with me, right? And I paid for the updraft kiln. Got it back here in one piece. So it all worked out this weekend. Totally by luck. I don't think that would happen again in probably a million years. I just happened to be on Facebook Marketplace. I seen the Olympic updraft kiln come up, and I immediately got in contact with the artist. I think it was only on there for like maybe a half a day. And so I feel pretty good about that. And also, I feel pretty good about a lot of the experiences I had up at the Adirondack Homestead Festival. Met some amazing people. And got to hang out with a hippie named Richard. And Richard was doing workshops on foraging and plants that you can eat and things like that. And real interesting guy. Got to chat about pots. He used to be a production potter as a job, as he followed the Grateful Dead across America for 10 years. And he backpacked and did hippie things. And Richard lives on a farm off the grid, and he's an amazing guy. And he has a ton of stories, and I loved listening to them all. So that was pretty amazing. In this episode, what we're going to do, I wanted to talk about the wood kiln and my experience at the wood kiln. And I want you to hear a section, and Bill gave me permission to post this, a recorded section when we reached the bisque stage at Cone 06, and we put the kiln, the wood kiln, in full body reduction. That's to bring up the irons in the clay and in the glazes, doing a full body reduction in the bisque stage. Then we brought it back out of reduction and went towards finishing the firing. So here at the bisque stage, it was fairly early. I believe we did that probably around 6 o'clock the previous night. We still had 24 hours to go on the firing, but it was great. Bill did a great job at centerlining the kiln, running the teams, and he has really good leadership skills, and I really loved working for him. So he ran a tight ship out there, and it didn't seem like we had to work all that hard and fight for a temperature increase, which is good, because it was so tightly managed. And it felt like back in school, we're constantly hurrying, constantly worried about reaching temperature, but slow and steady was how Bill ran things. And he ran things with a pretty tight ship, and he brought it home. And he had to, because a quarter of his work was in the kiln. And I think he had over 520 pieces in there. And so it's very important, with his own and other people's work, to have that all come together at the end. And I think the finishing team finished up 2 a.m. Last Sunday morning, and I was there Friday. From noon, I worked the noon shift to midnight, and then I worked from 6 a.m. to 1, 6 a.m. to noon, and then another team came on for Sunday afternoon, and then I took off because I had to come home and work at the paper factory. Then I had a pack to get ready to go to upstate New York. So I have another show coming up this weekend. It's the Wyoming County Artists Tour. I'm going to be at the Oldest House in Lacyville, Pennsylvania. And that should be a whole lot of fun. I need to still get the work fired out for those pieces. I'll be doing that tomorrow and the next day, doing the glazing. And I'll be packing up work and traveling down the road a couple miles to the oldest house in Laceyville, Pennsylvania, and setting up there with two painters. And they're a world of fun, the ladies, and they're amazing painters. I was there last year, and we had a really nice time. So I'm looking forward to that again, and also taking a little break. So after that, I have a few shows in the summer that I need to start making work for, and hopefully I can get those pots fired out in time. All right, so tonight it's really nice out, and we're going to sit on the back porch of the pottery shed, and we are going to have a discussion about the wood kiln and some of the processes that Bill enacted or followed that led to a decent wood firing, in my opinion. I was just a stoker, right? So I didn't have any skin in the game. Usually, kiln masters, they don't allow anybody that doesn't have skin in the game or pots in the kiln to fire the kiln. But Bill was kind enough to train me and to allow me, as long as I followed direction, to fire this kiln. And it was very generous of him, and I was very grateful to be there to learn from him to be able to do it, even though I didn't have any work in the kiln. So I learned so much, and I really appreciate it. All right, so I'm going to go get a coffee, and then meet me right out here on the back, porch, the pottery shed, and we'll have a discussion about the wood firing of the Bill Moon kiln. Hey friends, welcome back to the Creek Road Pottery Pin Tool Podcast. Pull up a chair on the old pottery porch and we'll start a discussion about the Bill Moon wood kiln up in Imagine Peace Pottery in Mills, PA. And I had an amazing time out there last weekend. And when I first went out there on Friday, they were stoking the kiln in a relaxed way. And Bill showed me around the kiln. It's an amazing catenary arch kiln. And like I said before, he had probably about 500 and some pieces in there. And it was a cool, windy day. And we were bundled up and stoking the fire. So one of the things that I noticed that all I needed to do was to work safely, be on time, and follow direction. And a lot of times, if things are done in that fashion, usually the teams can work pretty well with each other. And another thing that I observed is that a lot of times the kiln master, or the one firing the kiln, or the owner of the kiln, at that time is not your friend. He, at that time, is your coach, right? So he needs to make all the shots. He needs to have those tough conversations if things aren't going well. And if you're not doing well, he needs to sit you on the bench and replace you with somebody maybe that can be more responsive and follow direction better, right? So, I guess what I'm saying is that sometimes so much is at stake in these kilns that it's important to see the kiln master as a coach, not as your friend. And they need to bring all these processes that are happening together to a point when the temperature's reached and all the processes and center lines are met to fire out the kiln properly, because a lot of them depend on the work that's in the kiln for their income and to eat. So if it's really important, they're going to be all over that kiln like a bad suit to ensure good firing, right? And they're not going to be there to play around. So that's what I understood. And the attention to detail on this kiln was amazing. Bill told me one of the things that he wished he did to widen the view of the peepholes is to cut back the inside brick corner. And I'm going to do that on my kiln. Also, I noticed that he had smaller stoke holes. That prevented us from putting huge chunks into the kiln and stalling it out. And also prevented a lot of heat loss by making the stoke doors smaller. Also made it safer. One person could open the door, another could do the stoke, and then have it shut. And it was a much quicker process with a smaller door, and not a lot of the heat was lost. And for safety reasons, there wasn't a huge blast of heat coming out when this big door is open, you know. So I think that was one of the things that I noticed back from when I used to fire wood kilns. The door on the front of that firebox was pretty big back in the day. And you know, you had to watch out when it when it swung open. So that was not the case with the Bills. Walking around the kiln, attention to detail again was amazing. All the peepholes were labeled on the outside of the kiln with the numbers of what peephole it was that corresponded to the kiln book and the kiln log. And the times were written down in 15-minute segments. There was a spot in that segment for each peephole. And then you could write in that section what the cones were doing in the cone packs in that peephole. And then you could follow the progress. You could put notes in that kiln log about the type of things you were stoking and the temperature it was at the time. So very good centerline management, very good team management, and very good process management. So a lot of times people don't understand what centerline management is. Centerline management is just running the kiln at the desired firing the kiln at the desired measurement or process that you deem necessary to bring about the results on the work that's in the kiln. And a lot of times, once you figure out a way to do that, you try to do the same thing every time, unless there's a planned difference, right? So you can rule out abnormalities when troubleshooting, right? It helps with troubleshooting. So if you're doing the same thing every time for every firing, you rule out a lot of what do they call that? Anomalies. A lot of the times you can. And variabilities. Yeah, variabilities. So that's why you do strict centerline management. So part of the strict centerline management not only was the kiln book, but also how the kiln was stoked. And Bill had us stoking from both sides of the firebox. You did not stoke anything that he did not know about. The pieces that he wanted stoked were laid in front of the stoke hole. And when he said, stoke, that's the time you follow directions and you open the fire door and you stoked. He even would tell us where the stoke wood should land in the firebox to help with keeping the firebox even and burning. And so that was important. And a lot of times we were putting longer pieces in with live edge for the ash that would come off the wood to affect the pots. And some of those were longer pieces. So we had to aim, one person would aim towards the bag wall and the other towards the wall of the box on the other side, so you didn't collide in the middle, right? And then at times we would look at the fire pit through the portholes and the draft holes and decide where the pieces should fall. And sometimes you would drop them inside the door. Some you needed more towards the middle, all dependent on, you know, the fire and how it burned in the firebox. So that part of it was pretty amazing. And also, when the stoke was called, Bill would read the kiln. So even though the temperature would go up and drop, he didn't constantly watch temperature and the temperature fluctuations to guarantee when the stoke. There's a whole lot more going on. If there was black smoke coming out of the peephole and that temp dropped and there's black smoke and you could smell reduction, that meant that there was still fuel in the kiln. And even though the temp dropped and came back some, that did not mean it was time to stoke again. Because sometimes fuel in the back of the kiln hadn't left yet before we'd, you know, think we would need to stoke the front of the firebox. So it's important to read all those things and know all those things to be able to run a tight management, centerline management. Because depending on only a temperature gauge or a power meter, you know, it can be helpful. Plenty do it. We did it back in the day, 25 years ago. I was firing, depended on the pyrometer and the fluctuations in temperature to tell us when to stoke. But there's a lot more to it. And as I said, a lot of times we probably over-choked or over-stoked the kiln, choked it out with fuel while we watched that temperature. So we weren't paying attention to if all the fuel had left the kiln yet or not, right? So we would let things burn down when we needed to. And there's going to be a section in here where we do the full body reduction, and I'm going to put that section in so you can hear us doing that. And the full body reduction, as I said before, happened at cone 06, which is best temperature, and with iron in the clay, that's to bring up the iron look on both out of the clay and the glazes at that point. And then we continued with the firing as normal. And another interesting thing that Bill had was a raku section in the back of his kiln. So when the back of his kiln reached raku temperature, 06, a person was able to open up that back door and pull out a few pots. And even put a few more pots in, you know, as things were going. So, they did some naked raku out back the kiln as we, you know, between stokes and while we were waiting. And it worked out pretty nice. They got some pretty nice pieces. So the stoking was tightly regulated. The kiln was tightly regulated and things were documented. And also the cone packs set in the peepholes same way every time, so you knew what you were looking at, right? So another thing that Bill was big on was kiln safety. People were dressed for it, and he had gloves, he had face shields, tinted face shields that allowed you to look in, welding face shields. So that was really, really nice. Everything had a place. There was a place for everything. He kept the hot ashes from the fire, from the firebox, spilled out the portholes, cleaned up, and it was pretty nice around the kiln. So that was nice. So I think that overall, learning, I think that I now have confidence to put up the kiln in my backyard. And I came back so inspired. And I think that if I do things in a small way, I can bring about the kiln. And I have some good people around that can help me put it back up. And one of the things that Bill said, I asked him how he knew what kind of kiln he wanted to put up, really struck a note with me because it made sense. He said that you start with the pots first. If you get a type of pot with ash on it that you like, you build everything around that. Your kiln, your centerline management, your firing process to bring about that look in those pots. All your glazes. So you start with a pot first. And that's true. That can be very helpful. But for me, I started with the kiln first. Mainly because I'm stuck with this kiln. Because it was given to me probably about a year ago. And I had to go take it down and put it on pallets and ship it here. So it's out here in my back lawn. And I'm getting ready to put it up. So hopefully those things can be helpful to me. And things that I learned about how to stoke the kiln, what type of wood goes in the kiln. What I'd like to do next time is maybe travel up there and see how he loads the kiln, because I missed that part. I was just a stoker the one day. And then maybe catch an unloading before I get mine up. So he gave me a lot of tips. He gave me some worksheets. He talked to me about some other artists that he fired with and their advice about kilns. So I'm really glad he let me go up there and see how to wood fire. It's a fair and foul experience, and it takes a long time, right? And it's going to be a miserable process, but at the end, I guarantee you'll enjoy your sufferings when you get the pots out. Because when he was unloading a few days ago, they looked amazing. And the things that were coming out, the irons came up, and it looked like he had an amazing firing. And even those pots that were sitting on the bag wall that we were avoiding all day and all night not to hit, I think they turned out too. I seen some pictures. So, with that said, I'm going to connect that full body reduction where we're taking the readings of the cones, and then we go into the full body reduction. And you can hear somebody being sure and asking questions about what he's saying. And he repeats back, because clear communication is important. And if you ever have a question, there's no such thing as a bad question when you're trying to fire a wood kiln. And you need to know that you heard right. So there was a little bit of some confusion. Some questions were asked, and you will hear them answered. And you will hear how we put the kiln down at cone 06 in the full body reduction. We stoke it up, then we let it burn out after plugging it off. I went back, helped them push the dampers in. We put in the draft ports plugs, and we just closed it off and let it sit and burn and go into reduction for a while to bring up those irons. All right, so hopefully you enjoyed this, and hopefully enjoy hearing us put the kiln in to reduction. Take care, friends, and happy potting.
This could have been 5 minutes ago or whatever. 5-4, 08 down, 06 going down, or whatever you want to do, slight bend.
You're saying 06, not 6 or 8?
08 is down and 06 down. Am I saying...
No, I mean like...
08, yeah.
You're saying 08, not 8 or 6.
08, 06, 08, yes. Yes, ma'am. 5-5, we've got 08 down, 06 down. And then this last guy. Do we have room for one more? On those spies, I can't remember how many I did. Yeah, okay,
two more
cool,
slots.
Yeah. Oh,
I got 1, 3, 4, and 5 right now.
Yep, and on spy 7. 08 down, 06 down. And we have a slight bend on our 4. Or 05. But you can just do 08, 06 down. You want to look in there, kiddo?
I guess I'm just confused, because when I think of 08, 06, that's to me like a disc firing.
It is, yeah. That's where we do our body reduction.
Gotcha.
I have cone packs in there from 08, 06, 05, 04, so we can monitor when we need to go into body reduction. Then mid-range, 4, 5, and 6 will be the next
Thank
set
you.
Of cones.
Thank yep. you.
And then 9, 10, 11.
Now I understand.
Yeah.
I put 08 in there as like my guard cone. All right, so we're going to prep bricks. We're going to prep a big stoke. All right. And we're going to.
I still have one slot for a spy, but I don't have to worry about it, right?
Yeah, spies are good. So when we come out of the body reduction, we'll slowly start to drop. You know, we already dropped 06 down. We've already dropped in one of them. And 05's going down in a few of them. So we'll keep an eye on that. Like every half hour or so, we'll kind of check those cone packs in the front. And the front ones go 08, so you probably won't see those. 06, 05, 04. And the next row, so this is my front row, and then my next row of cones go this way.
Gotcha.
And it's 4, 5, 6. And then the other, my very last cone is 9, 10. Or I'm sorry, 8, 9.
Yeah.
Okay, so these bricks here we're going to use.
So we're
going to
plug this guy up.
So we're not going to stoke now, we're closing now.
We're gonna get ready to stoke, so
okay,
just
so
kind of prepping,
there.
Just taking
okay.
our time, so everything will get closed up.
All right,
ready to go. This
steam
is
work. You don't have to like shove wool or something in there to close the hole. Yeah,
Look at those bricks.
Beautiful.
Okay, we're just
gonna
get ready to go.
Okay,
craftsmanship.
Bill knows.
Yeah.
Dude, on fire.
Here. Okay. And we're going to do a fairly large stoke. We don't want to lose too much. Can we get a temp reading because we're at quarter tilt? We want to get our temp reading on our ground.
If you want me to write it down.
Or you can get ready to stoke. We're going to fill up fairly. Pretty good stoke here.
What?
So power button top left. Boom. 1670. There's your stoke. And we'll throw a couple of cords. Yeah, and just we'll go nice and easy. You don't need to.
I'll do the door.
You don't need to rush. And then we're gonna close those dampers in nice and slow.
Okay.
We're gonna fill it up pretty good. And we're gonna get some reduction and probably have to hang out outside for a bit.
Yep. Okay.
All right, open up and nice and easy and just fill her up. You don't gotta overfill it.
Okay.
If it's just full, it's full.
All right.
All right, I got one more and I'm good.
He's got four more.
That's okay, and if it gets too full, that's, you know.
All right.
You guys go ahead and keep stoking if you got room.
Yeah, I got room.
No problem.
One more.
Yeah, take your time, we're okay.
Good.
We're gonna go into body reduction at 10 to 9. Al, just get on that other side, for Dawn. And we're just gonna slowly push these in. We're gonna go. So we're just gonna go a quarter inch and just leave it. We okay up there?
No, a quarter inch.
That to me was really good.
That's all right. That's good. We'll go another quarter inch closed.